about that piano player? What a blessing. She did a fine job. Thank you so much. Well, first off, it's so nice to have a full house. Welcome to all of our guests. We're sparse sometimes in this little congregation, so it's nice to have you here. Did anybody watch the opening ceremonies for the Olympics last night? We got a few of you out there that watched them. What an amazing sight. Ephraim really kicked up his heels last night. It was just amazing. There was this incredible theme of the Industrial Revolution. Incredible effects. As the changes occurred, things come up out of the ground to show the advancements that mankind had given to the world, of course, through God's blessing. And it was this incredible view of human potential. It was uniquely choreographed with dancing and timed events that just added so much to the entire occasion. Excuse me, I promised my wife I would put my clock on. She thinks I'm long-winded or something. Maybe I am. Most of you know me. I can be a little long-winded at times. But you see this small piece of potential that our world athletes coming together gives us this reflection. I mean, I realize it's not a millennial reflection, but you can't help but think that through this event, we have world cultures coming together in one place, and it's not to fight. You know, it's for healthy competition. It's a shame that the world can't come together for anything else. And I have an iPhone. I really like it, but I loaded it with an app. I appreciate little fun facts. So I wanted to share a couple of them with you. I put an Olympic ad on my phone. It says that Olympian athletes that are returning to the Olympics for a second time, that they put as many as 70,000 practice hours in between Olympic to Olympic. And athletes that are touted to be contenders, or those that are expected to win medals, that number can change exponentially. You can do the math, 70,000 hours, that is a lot of hours. You break it down, 5-6 hours a day. Now, of course, it varies. You have different events, different people specifically do certain types of events. You have, shot putters and javelin throwers and pole vaulters and high jumpers. So, all that's going to be modified to an extent. But within that modification, there's always a regimented exercise. The strategy of having regimented exercise, it truly is mandatory. And because of those that preceded those athletes, they have this boundary effort that they need to accomplish. Those preceding athletes are examples to them. And so many of them today, we have so many records broken each year, they even add to that preceding effort that the athletes of the past have given them. It's so important that in preparation for athletics like this, that they have a consistent routine. And after all, they're all seeking for that gold medal as a result of the fruits of their efforts. If you would have turned to the book of Timothy. We'll go to 1 Timothy. And what I want to do today is I want to draw a comparison between us and them. Between us and elite athletes. Can you imagine? I look down and I see this thing protruding in front of me. I'm hardly an elite athlete. But the book of Timothy, I'm going to be in chapter 4. But both books of Timothy are such great examples for us. In context, Paul is taking this time to form Timothy into an amazing minister. That's what Paul is doing. And he's primarily doing that by teaching Timothy God's doctrines, the ordinances of law, and prophecy. And you can look through those books over and over, and if you, you know, take it down to its rawest form, those are the things that Paul is using to teach Timothy. Chapter 4, which is where I'm going to spend most of my time, it literally starts out with prophecy. It talks about the deceiving spirits that will be. It talks about the hypocrisy of mankind in the end times. It talks about, and this is a colorful way of putting this, but it talks about how consciences will be seared by a hot iron. It really puts a picture in your mind. You know, it's difficult to not look at how things are here today. And when that scripture about consciousness being seared by a hot iron, you know, today we're so desensitized by things that are going on. The television, the movies we go to, I mean, just society itself. We look in the newspaper, maybe even in our own neighborhoods, we see this incredible, terrible nature that man has today. And it desensitizes us. It desensitizes our emotions. But it also, and of course, I can't give any scriptures to make this, you know, profoundly true, but as you read through these scriptures in Timothy, it can be paralleled with the mark of the beast, that conscious being seared. Now, let's get back to where I was at. In chapter 4, in verse 6, just to reiterate what I had said earlier, Paul tells Timothy, says, if you instruct the brethren in these things, you will be a good minister of Jesus Christ, nourished in the word of faith and doctrine which you've carefully followed. And I love the way Paul uses association here. He uses the word association. If you look in those earlier verses in 4, there's these scriptures that are talking about how man has taken things that are a blessing from God, that the food laws, and saying that, you know, forbidding themselves of them is a good thing to do, or forbidding themselves to be married is a good thing to do. You know, the ascetics, historically, the ascetics use that philosophy, and it really is so contrary to what God teaches us to do. It's our adversary's teaching. It's satanic. But Paul wants Timothy to know that he needs to be well-grounded in doctrines. He needs to be well-grounded in understanding of prophecies. He needs to know God's laws and ordinances. In verse 7, and I'm going to spend most of my time in verse 7 and verse 6, in verse 7 and verse 8, it says, but reject profane and old wives' fables and exercise yourself rather to godliness. He says, for bodily exercise profits a little, but godliness is profitable for all things, having promise of the life that is now, that now is, and of that which is to come. And again, I want to spend some time on these two scriptures, but I want to first look at the first sentence of verse 8, where it says, for bodily exercise profits little. It sounds like it's minimizing exercise, but if you look at the definition in translation of the word that's being used here, the word is gymnasia. And in its very sounds, you can hear the word gymnasium. And that's the word that's being used in exercise here. So, in the translation of the sentence, what it's telling us is that if you choose to exercise to physically build your body, that if you're not consistent with it, if you don't keep it up, then it serves no purpose. Exercise, you know, for all of us, to some extent, you know, age is a boundary and so on, but exercise is important, but it only profits us if we're consistent with it. And then you look in verse 7, it says, exercise yourself rather in holiness. And I think about that. Gymnasia is this place that you go to acquire exercise, or it's this choice that you make to set time aside to exercise. But Paul's instructing Timothy to spend that time, go to that place that you have set aside, and study his word. Because physical will help us through our physical life, but the spiritual will help us forever. Wise, wise. Now, Paul's giving us this framework. It's a framework of knowing that as God's people, especially, you know, well, for all of us, but as baptized members of God's church. This framework, understanding and learning the doctrines and ordinances, is the only way that we can understand what God's standards are. So it's important that we put that time in to continue to study those doctrines, continue to study those laws so that we have the depth of understanding so that we can better reflect Him in our lives. I was so impressed with how our athletes represented themselves last night. The walk of the athletes, you know, they're coming into the building and they're all wearing these incredibly culturally colorful uniforms in representation of either their flag or whatever is important, the important colors that represents their country. And as they came in, they created this circle and they kind of bunched up with one another. And as each one came in, they got tighter and they got tighter and they got tighter. And as the camera panned away, all these kids have these smiles ear to ear on their face. Whether they're black or brown or white or yellow, they have this joy. And again, I realize it's not millennial, and you like to think that when you see it. But what an amazing thing that we have as far as understanding of how things will be, how the remnant post-tribulation will be when Christ is our ruler. We'll be looking around and we'll be seeing smiles around when we're being ruled perfectly. In wrapping this thing up, I want to look at two scriptures. I hope that you're seeing the correlation I'm making here, the effort that the Olympians put in physically to accomplish the goals that there are, but Paul's example of how that exercise that we should be doing, even though physical exercise is a good thing, spiritual exercise is so much more important. In 2 Timothy 2, in verse 5, it says, if anyone competes in athletics, he's not crowned unless he competes according to the rules. He's not crowned unless he competes according to the rules. In Revelation 3:11, it says, behold, I come quickly. Hold fast to what I have, that no one may take your crown. Little correlation there, you see. We have athletes striving for the gold. We're striving for the gold also. You know, the gold that our Olympians are striving for, they'll be taking them home with them, and they'll be lasting them a lifetime. They'll have that memory. They'll have that occurrence a lifetime. But the gold that we take home, that lasts an eternity.